Welcome to today's reading of the San Angelo Standard Times, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael reading the San Angelo Standard Times newspaper for the week of Sunday, April 17th, 2022. I'll begin with the most recent articles. San Angelo's street maintenance begins April 25th. Here's When, Where, and What to Know by Elena Edgen, published April 20th. Multiple streets across San Angelo will receive maintenance starting April 25th. Here's a look at what is happening when and what residents should do before work begins on their road. The project, named 2022 HA5 Street Maintenance Project, will begin Monday, April 25th and continue through Tuesday, May 3rd, pending delays. Impacted streets will close at 7 a.m. prior to work starting and remain closed for 24 hours after the HA5 is applied. Residents can receive text notifications about road closures by texting PRESERVATION to 77222. What residents should know, including parking. While roads will close at 7 a.m., vehicles can leave the area until 7:30 a.m. Andale Construction, the company doing the work, will have a shuttle service to take residents from their vehicles to their homes if needed. Residents cannot cross the street for only the 24 hours that HA5 is applied in front of their home, not for the full 18 days stated on the flyer. Residents should turn off their sprinkler systems on the days streets will be worked on, as HA5 cannot be applied to wet roads. What is HA5? This is a surface treatment that limits oxidative damage on asphalt from moisture and ultraviolet UV radiation, according to a City of San Angelo news release. Treating roads with this versus seal coating tends to be cleaner, quieter, smoother, and maintain their aesthetic black color for up to 8 years on average. The main function of this is to seal the roadway, which prevents moisture from reaching the street's base, and acts as a sunscreen, protecting it from oxidation. Utilizing this method is part of an effort to change the city's focus from a reactive repair focused operation to a proactive preservation operation, according to the city release. For more information, including maps and road closure schedules, visit hafiveinfo.com/San Angelo. Remains of Richard Parker of IKEA, reported missing in 2010, found near Lake Brownwood, by Laura Gutschke, Abilene Reporter News, published April 20th. Brownwood. The remains of a Hill Country man reported missing in 2010 have been located in Brown County, the Brown County Sheriff's Office said in a news release. BCSO deputies were called Tuesday to the Texas 4-H Conference Center at Lake Brownwood after an employee reported finding possible human remains, the release said. While processing the scene, law enforcement officials found a driver's license for Richard Parker, 76, as well as other identifying information, the release said. Parker was last seen with his truck at Mountain View Lodge on April 24, 2010, the release said. He was from IKEA, which is about 125 miles east of Brownwood. The lodge where Parker was last seen is about 1 mile from the conference center. The original search for Richard Parker at Lake Brownwood. Following is what the Reporter News published on May 19, 2010 about the search for the missing man. Officials in Brown County say they are scaling back efforts to find Richard Parker, an elderly man who has been missing since April 23rd. Parker, from IKEA in Hill Country, had been missing almost 3 weeks when the Brown County Sheriff's Office got the case. "We have been running full blast ever since," said Brown County Sheriff Bobby Grubbs. Over the last week, dive teams from the Department of Public Safety have searched Lake Brownwood. Texas Parks and Wildlife has used sonar equipment on the lake, and teams from the DPS have searched the area around Mountain View Lodge with cadaver dogs and helicopters. Deputies from the Brown County Sheriff's Office have searched the area on horseback. So far, there has been no trace of Parker. Witnesses last saw Parker, 76, about 5 a.m. April 25th as he drove into Mountain View Lodge. They told authorities Parker left his pickup near a boat ramp but was too disoriented to move it. The witnesses said they helped him park his truck in a parking space at the lodge. Grubb said there was evidence that Parker may have gone into a travel trailer at the lodge because they found open Dr. Pepper cans, an unmade bed, and a pair of men's tennis shoes. "We found some black tennis shoes inside the travel trailer," Grubb said. "If the shoes belong to Parker, there's a chance he could be barefooted," Grubb said. The intensive search has been called off, and officials hope witnesses will call in any new leads. "It is a situation we will just keep working," Grubb said. "We're hoping for the best, but preparing for the worst." Parker was last seen wearing a short-sleeved plaid shirt, dark blue jeans, black tennis shoes, and wire-framed glasses. He is 6 feet 2 inches tall and weighs 190 pounds. Parker suffers from dementia and needs medication for type 1 diabetes. San Angelo's Wild West Fest includes Whiskey Myers, Turnpike Troubadours. Here's What to Know by Rosanna Frere, published April 19th. Wild West Fest is back and bigger than ever for San Angelo. The now week-long event has snagged heavy hitters with Whiskey Myers and Turnpike Troubadours as the headliners. On November 29th, 2021, Turnpike Troubadours posted a new group photo on social media with nothing more than a smiling emoji. Fans were exhilarated, thinking the band was back together after an unexpected hiatus in 2019. Sure enough, the band began posting tour details the next day. One of these included San Angelo's annual Wild West Fest. The fest will rock the river stage from July 29th, July 30th, and August 5th, with Turnpike, Whiskey Myers, Austin Mead, and more. There will be other performances between July 29th and August 5th as part of the event in other locations, including Blaine's Pub, Fiddle Strings, Sports Next Level, the House of Fifi Dubois, and the Penny Tap House, with 14 artists scheduled several nights, including there will be several after parties at. Online ticket sales begin at 10 a.m. Friday, April 22nd on StubWire. General admission tickets and VIP tickets vary per day, ranging from $50 to $400. This year, Wild West Fest will limit tickets to 6 tickets per transaction and 2 transactions per credit card, up to 12 tickets. Also new for 2022, there will be no lawn chairs allowed on Friday, August 5th, per the city of San Angelo. Chairs will be provided. There will also be food trucks, vendors, and festival merchandise. San Angelo Gives opens advanced donations. Here's everything to know about the event by Rosanna Frere and Elena Edgen, published April 20th. San Angelo's biggest community fundraising drive doesn't begin until May 3rd. But donations can also be made before the one-day event begins. Here's a look at San Angelo Gives and how it benefits local nonprofit organizations. What is San Angelo Gives? The 24-hour online donation event, which starts May 3rd, connects the Concho Valley with community nonprofits. Last year, $3.7 million was raised for local organizations. Since 2015, more than $13 million has been raised through San Angelo Gives. The goal is to inspire our community to come together for 24 hours and contribute as many charitable dollars as possible to support the work of local nonprofit organizations, according to the website. Prorated matching funds and prize money will be available to amplify charitable donations, amplification up to the first $25,000 per donor. The event starts the minute May 3rd begins and ends at 11:59 p.m. How to donate to San Angelo Gives. Donations must be made through sanangelogives.org. There is a minimum of $10 and no maximum. People will need a credit card or can call the foundation office at 325 847-7071. Donations are tax deductible. Who is participating? In 2022, 228 San Angelo nonprofits and 24 fundraisers are participating. Organizations include animals, education, health, libraries, and many more. For a full list, visit sanangelogives.org/nonprofits. The fundraisers have various monetary goals. Here's a list of the fundraisers for 2022. Cristobal FFA Agricultural Science Farm, which hopes to help students grow through agricultural education. Goal, $45,000. Coke County Memorial Garden hopes to upgrade their digital sign. Funds will also help Vision with a Purpose maintain lighting at the park. Goal, $3,000. Community Cats Program, fundraising through Critter Shack Rescue, wants to raise funds for low-cost spay and neuter to area community cat caretakers and trap-neuter return workshops. Goal, $10,000. Eaton Hill Needs You, for Eaton Hill Nature Center and Preserve near Sonora, is in need of funding to help keep the center open. Goal, $2,000. Fix Your Critter Voucher Program through Critter Shack and Cassie's Place works at veterinary clinics in San Angelo and Wall to offer monthly spay and neuter vouchers for pet owners. Goal, $10,000. General support for the St. Paul Presbyterian Church. Goal, $1,500. Homeless support aims to raise funds to help homelessness via Concho Community Action Agency. Goal, $2,000. Movies in the Park hopes to gather donations to continue the summer Movie in the Park program. Goal, $5,000. My Passion for Those We Serve Through This Ministry wants to raise funds for Concho Valley Turning Point. Goal, $5,000. Preserving History One Step at a Time by the Fort Chadbourne Foundation aims to restore statues at the fort. Goal, $5,000. Trails for San Angelo hopes to raise $10,000 to help improve trails. West Texas Fix, WTXFIX, for Critter Shack also aims to raise $10,000 to help the spay and neuter program, which works with Cassie's Place. Two fundraisers for the Boy Scouts of America, Texas Southwest Council, on Join David and Join Don in supporting. Goals are $750 and $1,000. Fundraisers for Howard College scholarships include Howard College Fundraiser, Achieving Dreams, Happy Birthday to Caitlin, Hawks Helping Hawks, Howard College San Angelo Scholarships, Howard College Scholarship Fundraiser, Howard College Making Dreams Real, In Memory of Portis Ribble, and Never Give Up. And now we have a couple of rodeo-related articles. Rodeo fans treated to great performances at San Angelo's Cinch Shootout by Ted Harbin, special to the Standard Times, published April 17th. Big rides equal big scores in pro rodeo, and a couple of cowboys proved that during Saturday's Cinch Shootout at the San Angelo Stock Show and Rodeo. The event features a unique format in which 10 contestants in each event compete in the opening round. The top three then advance to the shootout portion of the championship night. It's there that the titleists were crowned and the money was paid out. Cole Rayner kicked off the shootout with a 90.5 point ride on Picket Pro Rodeo's Top Flight to win bareback riding and the $7,500 top prize issued to the winners of each event. He then waited out Cole Frank's 88-point ride on Pickett's Night Gazer and Tim O'Connell's 87.5-point ride on Pete Carr Pro Rodeo's Dirty Jacket to make sure his ride held up. Rayner matched moves well with Top Flight, an 18-year-old Bay athlete that was named the 2020 Bareback Horse of the Year. It was a classic display of a bareback rider's spur stroke from the neck of the horse back to the handle of his rigging, all while in rhythm with the horse's bucking motion. Just a few minutes later, saddle bronc rider Brody Kress followed with a 90 on Larry Culpepper, a big bay roan gelding that the car firm acquired this past December. Possibly the most competitive event in the shootout was the tie-down roping, which featured three world champions, Shane Hanchy, 2013, Haven McGed, 2019, and Shad Mayfield, 2020. McGed kicked off the contest with a 7.7-second run, which would have been the fastest of the opening round. Instead, he watched Mayfield speed past in a 6.9 seconds, but Hanchy topped that just seconds later by just a tenth of a second. Reigning world champions Caleb Driggers and Junior Nogueira pulled off a similar feat in team roping. After Coleman Proctor and Logan Medlin jumped out to an early lead with their 4.4 second run, Driggers and Nogueira then beat that time by a tenth of a second to claim the biggest prize. Tyler Wagerspack, the three-time and reigning world champion steer wrestler, stopped the clock in 3.7 seconds to claim that title. Bull rider Josh Frost, fresh off his national finals rodeo aggregate title in December, had to test his skills on three bulls, but he made it pay off. In the first round, his bull, Black Bart, slipped to the ground, sending Frost to a second bull. The Utah Cowboy then rode Carr's Hammerhead for 75 points to slip into the shootout round. As the first man to go, Frost held on to the side of Carr's Curly Bill for about 2 seconds, earning an 87.5-point ride. The other two bull riders, Ernie Corson Jr. and Kai Hamilton, did not stay on their bulls for the qualifying 8 seconds, and Frost walked away with the title. While the six traditional men's events went off in a 10-man format with three in the final round, the women's barrel racing was an invitational with just four cowgirls in the mix. Reigning world champion Jordan Briggs posted a 14.19 second run to win the title. Of the eight winners on Saturday's cinch shootout, five own world championship Driggers, Nogueira, Wagerspack, and Briggs all claimed gold buckles in 2021. It was Nogueira's second. He won the 2016 all-around title. And Wagerspack's third, but the cream rose to the top inside Foster Communications Coliseum. And now here's our next rodeo story. Young bareback rider Hayes gets biggest win at San Angelo Rodeo, by Ted Harbin, special to the Standard Times, published April 18th. Forgive Keenan Hayes for kicking himself. The young cowboy had a decision to make last fall, and he chose to continue to compete in his tryout campaign in professional rodeo for a second straight year. After winning both rounds and the aggregate championship at the San Angelo Stock Show and Rodeo, he pushed his 2022 earnings to nearly $40,000. Most young men would have taken their earnings from their first permit year and given themselves at moving up in the world standings, but Hayes isn't eligible for that. He's eligible to battle for permit holder earnings and points, and that's it. He was really kicking himself after finding out he pocketed $16,506 in San Angelo. I entered my circuit finals on my permit and won money at the circuit finals, said Hayes of Hayden, Colorado, who collected $6,200 at the Mountain State Circuit Finals last October, and that money counts toward his 2022 standings. At the time, I figured if I bought my card, I'd have to lose money. I'd won. Now I'm kicking myself for not buying my card, He looked like a seasoned pro inside Foster Communications Coliseum. He won the first round with an 86-point ride on Hampton Pro Rodeo's Rising Tide. That took place nearly 2 weeks ago. Hayes returned Friday with incredible earnings already in his pocket, then dominated the championship round with a 90-point ride on Pickett Pro Rodeo's Nightcrawler. In his wake, he left behind five cowboys with national finals rodeo credentials, including three-time world champion, nine-time qualifier, Caleb Bennett, six-time finalist, Tanner Oss, and a couple of bronc busters that have been to Pro Rodeo's grand finale once in their careers. "It's the biggest rodeo I've ever won," Hayes said. "It couldn't have come at a better time. I had some truck problems this week, so after this, we'll have the cost of that covered." The reality of rodeo life is young contestants can compete on a permit. Then they can purchase their PRCA cards after earning at least $1,000 in a year. Hayes had that option, but he took what he thought was the best approach. There are several talented young bareback riders out there, and he wanted a bit more seasoning. He looks like he's well done. "At this point, I'll just keep after it and maybe set a new record for money won on a permit and see what happens next year," he says. "It's just awesome the kind of money they are paying at this rodeo. I'm stoked that I had a chance to compete for it. I'm super blessed it ended up in my favor." Even to those in rodeo, it seems as though Hayes has come out of nowhere. That's just not the case. He's refined his craft in the Rocky Mountains and now has a chance to prove it. Casey Coletti put on a rodeo school in Craig, Colorado, Hayes said of the NFR qualifier. "He taught me the basics and I took it from there. From then on, it has raised my riding level." He's riding pretty high in West Texas this weekend. The rodeo performances will conclude with the Cinch Shootout All-Star Extravaganza at 7:30 p.m. Saturday. I had mentioned that we were going to read two rodeo articles, but with your permission, I request that you indulge me in reading a few more of these articles, as the San Angelo Stock Show and Rodeo is one of the biggest traditions in the Concho Valley. I'd like to remind you before I continue with a few more articles related to the rodeo that the rodeo performances are over, and that the following articles were written a bit earlier, a few days earlier than the ones that we just read. This one is "Hometown Favorite Ty Harris Rocks the Coliseum at San Angelo Rodeo" by Ted Harbin, special to the Standard Times, published April 14th. Peggy Harris had her seat inside Foster Communications Coliseum. Her grandson, Ty Harris, likely looked for her there before he competed during Thursday's 10th performance of the San Angelo Stock Show and Rodeo. Though her seat was vacant, her presence was still felt, and he roped himself into the lead of his hometown rodeo heading into Friday's championship round. "This is the first time I've roped at the San Angelo Rodeo without her," Ty Harris said, noting that his grandmother died last June. "If there was one thing I wished, is my granny sitting right there," he told announcer Boyd Palhamas as he pointed in the direction of her seat. "But she's got the best seat in the world." Harris roped and tied his calf in 7.7 seconds to move into aggregate lead with the best two-run cumulative time of 15.6 seconds. That puts him in top position as he prepares for Friday's short go-round, which will feature only the top 12 contestants in each event, based on the 10 preliminary performances that concluded Thursday. "I'd like to say that people who really have pressure are the ones battling cancer or have something they're really struggling with," said Harris, a three-time national finals rodeo qualifier. "The truth is, I get more nervous roping at this arena than I get roping anywhere else." Pressure tests an athlete's will and fortitude. It's one thing to ride a horse and rope a calf, but it's quite another when the weight of an entire community rests on one's shoulders before they even nod their head in competition. The last time Harris was in this position was two seasons ago, and he entered the championship night in 11th place. Being the man with a target on his back is considerably different. He's focused and ready for the shot at claiming one of the most cherished titles in pro rodeo. If I were to win this rodeo, it would be a top three accomplishment for me ever, he said. Making my first NFR was huge, but winning this rodeo would be everything. He's just 23, so he'll have plenty of chances to do so. But there's always something lurking in the back of a competitor's mind when he enters a coliseum he has been in since he was very young. While Foster Communications Coliseum is home to Harris, it's become quite comfortable to bareback rider Caleb Bennett, a two-time champion who punched his short round ticket with an 84-point ride on Pickett Pro Rodeo's Put It Away on Thursday. It has been a money hole for me, said Bennett, 33, a nine-time NFR qualifier from Kerrvales, Montana. Obviously, the big thing is you have the opportunity to draw good ones in San Angelo. I seem to draw the right horse that fits me and make it work. Only 4 points, 86 to 82, separates the top bareback rider in the first round, Keenan Reed Hayes, from 12th man entering Friday's championship. That shows how good the guys are and how consistent the bucking horses are, said Bennett, who won San Angelo in 2019 and 2021. Everybody's got a chance to win this title. That's one of the cool things about this rodeo is that Pete Carr brings in all these other contractors, which gives us the opportunity to get on more good bucking horses. San Angelo's cool because the people are always into it. It's a hell of a rodeo. The crowd loves it, eats it up. When the crowd gets into it like they do here, it just helps me feed off them and helps me do my job better. Maybe that's why the competition is so sharp for the best cowboys in the game. Our next article. Rookie tie-down roper Bach puts on a show at San Angelo Rodeo. By Ted Harbin, special to the Standard Times, published April 13th. 20 months ago, Case Bach left his home in South Central Louisiana with a plan for college and a dream for rodeo. He's living both at the same time. As a sophomore at Sam Houston State University in Huntsville, Texas, he leads the Southern Region tie-down roping standings. If he can hold on to at least a top three spot at the end of the 10-event season that concludes later this month, he will advance to the College National Finals Rodeo. He's also hoping to end his first season in the PRCA as the top newcomer, and he made a significant claim for such Wednesday night during the ninth performance of the San Angelo Stock Show and Rodeo. Bach roped and tied his calf in 7.7 seconds to move into third place in the opening round. That's worth some serious Texas cash for the Opelousas, Louisiana cowboy. I'd really like to win the Resistol Rookie of the Year award because it's a big deal, he said. A lot of guys that do that go on to do a lot of great things in their rodeo careers. It's true. In tie-down roping alone, men like Shane Hanchey, Tuff Cooper, Caleb Schmidt, Cody Ohl, Fred Whitfield, and Joe Beaver have all parlayed their rookie titles into world championships. They account for 30 total gold buckles. Bach would love to add at least one more, but first things first. He's just halfway to doing what he wants in San Angelo. He'll rope his second calf Thursday night after the rodeo performance concludes. If his two-run cumulative time is among the top 12, he will advance to Friday's championship round with an opportunity for a big win early in his young career. I drew really good, but I got a good start on a really good calf, he said of Wednesday's run. Once I got her roped and on the ground, I just needed to make the best run I could make. He sounds like a veteran, but he's been coached that way. By attending Sam Houston State, he has the opportunity to be around one of the greatest to have ever played the game. I decided to go to school there because I got a good offer to go rodeo, and I like the rodeo program, Box said. The education program is great, especially the ag education. Plus, I get to live right next to Joe Beaver, the 8-time world champion, and I get to rope with him a lot. Bach is getting his money's worth and then some with that level of roping education. Beaver won 5 world championship roping calves and added 3 more gold buckles in his all-around race. He was inducted into the Pro Rodeo Hall of Fame 22 years ago. In the practice pen, he can really lift your confidence, Bach said. He can get in your head and tell you to go fast, but still be consistent. He works that mental game. I think Joe's biggest deal is to be solid and do your job. He's so good at the mental aspect of it. Joe helps inside and outside the arena. He's a good role model for me. And it seems the student is getting all A's in his roping classes, too. Bach is 13th in the rookie standings, but will move up after first round is paid out. Beaver was the first tie-down roper in PRCA history to have ever won a rookie title and a world championship in the same season. He did that in 1985. The only person to have done it since was Haven McGed in 2019. All Bach has to do is look at the record books, and he'll have plenty of inspiration to keep chasing his rodeo dreams. This is one of the bigger rodeos I've been a part of where it's like a first step into my rookie year, he said. I've done good at a few others, like the last few years at the Huntsville Pro Rodeo, which is kind of my hometown rodeo while I'm in school. I won it last year and finished 2nd this year. If he keeps it up, Bach and the 13-year-old Sorrel Gelding he just acquired last summer might walk away from West Texas with the coveted San Angelo Championship too. And now this article, Extreme Bulls. Australian Kai Hamilton tastes victory in San Angelo, by Ted Harbin, special to the Standard Times, published April 11th. Keep a starving man away from food. He'll only get hungrier. Keep a bull rider away from the arena. He'll only crave it more. Kai Hamilton has lived it over the last month, but he feasted Sunday afternoon during the San Angelo Extreme Bulls at Foster Communications Coliseum. Hamilton rode 2 bulls for a cumulative score of 175.5 points to outdistance runner-up Parker Bredding by 5 points and claim the prestigious Extreme Bulls buckle awarded to winners of top-tier events. He also collected $11,757 and nearly doubled his season earnings in one fell swoop. It's pretty exciting, especially after having 4 weeks off, missing the American and not being able to finish off Houston, said Hamilton, who suffered a lacerated kidney during a wreck at the PBR Global Cup inside AT&T Stadium in Arlington, Texas, on March 5th. It felt good to capitalize at a bigger Extreme Bulls of the year and win some good money. Hamilton started off the day by riding Rafter H. Rodeo's Night Prowler for 85 points, finishing 2nd in the opening go-round to Trevor Kastner, who rode Pete Carr Pro Rodeo's Marlboro Man for 86.5 points. Hamilton then was one of only 2 cowboys to cover their bulls for the qualifying 8 seconds in the championship round, matching moves with Carr's Time Bomb for 90.5 points. I've never been on him before, but he was a big Brahma, and I like the look of them big, cool bulls, said Hamilton of Mackay, Queensland, Australia. He moved to the United States a few years ago to attend Odessa College and Sul Ross State University in Alpine. I was excited when I seen him. He was a handful. He had me working the whole time, and I kept trying, and it paid off. Yes, it did. His earnings so far in San Angelo will move him into seventh place in the Extreme Bulls standings. It should also move him from 43rd to inside the top 25 of the world standings. Hamilton rode earlier this week and scored 85.5 points to be in good position to advance to the San Angelo Stock Show and Rodeo's championship round Friday night. He's on the kind of roll he needs to return to the National Finals Rodeo for the third straight year. He finished last year 8th in the world standings and was 4th in 2020. I don't like to call it momentum because that's how I expect myself to ride all the time, Hamilton said. When you do good, it certainly boosts your confidence and makes it easier. He can now carry that tenacity into Friday night and hope to claim the rodeo's title, too. Returning to San Angelo for the short round is always a goal of cowboys who compete for a living. That building's pretty cool, he said. It's always jam-packed inside there, and it's always electric. It's a good atmosphere, and it's a really well-run rodeo. And Extreme Bulls, they know how to run a good rodeo in San Angelo. It's a great event. And this, I promise, is our final rodeo-related article. This one goes back a little bit further. Defending world champion moves into tie atop leaderboard at San Angelo Rodeo by Ted Harbin, special to the Standard Times, and this was published back on April 10th. Two rounds in two buildings with different setups is uniquely San Angelo for women that run barrels. Only the top 120 cowgirls after the first go-round compete in the performances of the San Angelo Stock Show and Rodeo inside Foster Communications Coliseum, and only the top 12 with the two-run cumulative time advance to the championship round, which takes place Friday, April 15th. Jordan Briggs of Tolar, Texas, virtually secured her spot in the short round during Saturday's matinee, the seventh performance of the storied rodeo, now celebrating its 90th anniversary. She rounded the cloverleaf pattern in 14.29 seconds and is fourth in the second go-round. Most importantly, though, her aggregate time of 29.99 seconds ties for first place with Michelle Alley. Nobody in Saturday night's performance moved the two cowgirls from their top spot atop the leaderboard. I hope that gets me back to the final round, said Briggs, a second-generation world champion, who last year followed in the footsteps of her three-time titleist mother, Christy Peterson, in claiming the gold buckle. There are some tough girls in the next two performances. If I get back to the short round, I'll be happy. San Angelo's unique in that it features open entries for the first round of barrel racing, then the top 120 advance to the progressive round. The champion will be the lady who posts the fastest three-run cumulative time after the rodeo ends next Friday. I love that they get a lot of entries, Briggs said of the rodeo. They let everybody run, so it pays really well, and it gives everybody a shot. When they bring back that many to the performances, it lets everybody get their feet wet in the Coliseum. There were only 0.8 of a second between first and 120th. That's a tough barrel race. Yes, it is. But Briggs is pretty tough, too, especially with Rollo, an 8-year-old sorrel gelding that was named the 2021 Barrel Racing Horse of the Year. That vote happened before the National Finals Rodeo, and the tandem then went on to pocket just shy of $200,000 in 10 December nights to claim gold. Having a horse like Rollo, she knows he can handle the different types of ground that comes from one round to another or any size arena. He's a good boy, she said. I think this is his last rodeo for a while. He's going to take a break, and I'm going to focus on my futurity colts. That will happen after they run next weekend, a return to this memorable Coliseum. It's a great arena, and it's fun to change it up like that, Briggs said of the different setups. Last year, I stayed for a performance, and I had to sit on a step because there was not a seat in that Coliseum. San Angelo is very much a rodeo town, and I enjoy going there. And finally, before we leave rodeo-related business, I wanted to, since we've read a lot about the athletes and competitors, it might be interesting for you to know what the results were from the final rodeo standings. I'm just going to read the first place of each of these standings from the different events. The San Angelo Stock Show and Rodeo Cent Shootout, bareback riding, number one was Cole Reiner with 90.5 points on Picket Pro Rodeo's Top Flight, winning $7,500. Cole Franks and Tim O'Connell were second and third, respectively. Steer wrestling, the number one winner was Tyler Waguzpak, 3.7 seconds to win $7,500. Tristan Martin and J.D. Struxness followed that at numbers two and three. For team roping, there was a tie at number one, Caleb Driggers and Junior Nagoria at 4.3 seconds. They each won $7,500. That was followed by Coleman Proctor and Logan Medlin, who tied for second, and no other qualified runs. Saddle bronc riding, number one was Brody Kress, 90 points on P-Car Rodeo's Larry Culpepper, winning $7,500. That was followed by Leighton Green, who was the second place. Tie-down roping, number one, Shane Hanchy, 6.8 seconds for $7,500, followed in second and third places by Shad Mayfield and Haven McGed. And then finally, barrel racing, the number one top spot was Jordan Briggs, 14.19 seconds, who won $3,000. She was followed in second place by Sherry Kirby, in third place by Lonnie Lester, and in fourth place, Jana Bean. And then finally, bull riding. Josh Frost was number one with 87.5 points on Pete Carr Rodeo's Curly Bill for $7,500 and no other qualified rides. Finally, it's just worth a mention that this was the 90th San Angelo Stock Show and Rodeo. And as I promised, we'll move on to other news. San Angelo man charged with assaulting woman before witness intervened, by Elena Edgen, published April 19th. A San Angelo man, previously convicted for assault, is facing enhanced charges after a woman was physically beaten before a witness intervened, according to court documents released Monday, April 18th. Around January 10th, police arrived at a residence on Gunter Street for a reported domestic disturbance. A woman told them a man called her and wanted to meet up, and she did not want him to come over, according to an arrest affidavit. The man then reportedly drove to her residence, kicked in the front door, and started punching the woman in the face. He also put his hands around her neck and knocked her to the ground, according to the affidavit. Officers noted the woman had swelling and was bleeding from related injuries. The woman fled down the street until he caught up to her, when he continued assaulting her. A witness saw the struggle, including the man trying to force her into a vehicle, and heard the woman yell for help, according to an affidavit. The witness intervened by yelling at the man and writing down his license plate number on her hand. The man then let the woman go and drove away, records state. Johnny Perez Del Rio III, 48, was arrested Sunday, April 17th, under the indicted charges of second-degree felony burglary of a habitation and third-degree felony assault on a family household member with a prior conviction. Both have been enhanced to a habitual offender status due to his prior convictions for stalking in Tarrant County in 2018 and aggravated assault with a deadly weapon in 1993 in Tom Green County. A court date has not been set as of 8 a.m. Monday, April 18th, according to online court records. Ex-employee charged after stolen water heaters appear for sale on Facebook, by Elena Edgen, published April 15th. An ex-employee of a San Angelo contracting company has been indicted after tankless water heaters were posted for sale online, according to court documents released Tuesday, April 12th. On January 30th, police met with employees of a contracting company about a reported burglary in the 5700 block of Melrose Avenue. Surveillance video showed a white Chevrolet Tahoe back up to an apartment unit, which was being used as storage for the company's equipment earlier that morning, records state. A back window of the unit had been broken and company property was taken. Employees stated only people who had worked for the company would know this unit was being used for storage, according to an arrest affidavit. Another employee recognized the Chevrolet as one used by two former employees who had recently been terminated. One of the former employees told investigators he had sold the Chevrolet to the other former coworker in August 2021, records state. A company official showed investigators screenshots of the ex-employee listing the Mary Eco 180 tankless water heaters on Facebook Marketplace. The official stated these heaters are not sold locally and match the ones stolen from the unit, according to the affidavit. Stephen Ward Ho, 53, was arrested February 10th on suspicion of burglary of a building, possession of drug paraphernalia, and several warrants. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $662 bond as of 9 a.m. Friday, April 15th, according to online jail records. An indictment filed in March charged him with burglary of a building. This is a second-degree felony punishable by up to 2 years in jail and a fine not to exceed $10,000. A court date has been tentatively scheduled for late May, according to online court records. San Angelo teen charged after multiple burglaries, including middle school, ends in pursuit. By Elena Edgen, published April 15th. A San Angelo teen has been indicted after several burglaries across multiple counties, ended in a pursuit in Kerr County, according to court documents released Tuesday, April 12th. On January 17th, police arrived to a pizza restaurant on Sherwood Way for a reported incident of unauthorized use of a motor vehicle. A delivery driver had entered the restaurant, and when they exited, their blue 2018 Toyota Tacoma was gone, records state. Surveillance video from the restaurant showed an unidentified man enter the vehicle and drive away, records state. 3 days later, police discovered the man and a juvenile had broken into Lone Star Middle School on January 16th and 17th. They stole an Apple iPad and personal items belonging to a teacher, according to an arrest affidavit. On January 20th, investigators learned the Toyota had been part of a pursuit in Kerr County. The pursuit started after a state trooper recognized the vehicle, which had been involved in a local store theft, records state. The driver, Isaiah LeBrent Wyatt II, 17, and juvenile passenger, fled from law enforcement until the Toyota crashed into several other vehicles. They then attempted to run away, but were detained by law enforcement, according to online court documents. Inside the Toyota, investigators found the items missing from the school. Kerr County deputies met with Wyatt, who said he took the Toyota, stole from the school, and committed other burglaries with the juvenile in other counties, according to the affidavit. An indictment filed in March charged him with the burglary of a building and unauthorized use of a vehicle. Both are state jail felonies punishable by up to 2 years in prison and a fine not to exceed $10,000 each. A court date has been tentatively scheduled for late April, according to online court records. Stephenville Coffee House announces San Angelo location. Here's how to apply. By Elena Edgen, published April 15th. Coffee lovers, rejoice. A college-based coffee house is coming to San Angelo and is hiring now. The Cold Smoke Craft House, 1296 West Washington Street in Stephenville, opened around August 2021 and has since become a popular spot. With the slogan, Cure What Ails You, the coffee shop offers snacks, sandwiches, pastries, and other treats, along with an array of coffee options. Cold Smoke is part of the Barefoot Campus Outfitter Organization, a college-focused outfitting company, and this is the group's first try at opening coffee shops. "We're expanding to let everybody get a chance to enjoy this amazing atmosphere," said Ashton Ball, head manager for the Stephenville and upcoming San Angelo location. "People should expect a really cool, new atmosphere that is laid back, warm, inviting, and has great craft coffee." The new location will be at 1819 Knickerbocker Road across from San Angelo Stadium and will open in the next few months, Ball said. The business's Facebook page stated the San Angelo location is hiring a full-time manager and part-time positions. People can send their applications to ashton@coldsmokech.com. Include your availability in the email. San Angelo man charged after woman shot, police endangered, and child sexually abused. By Elena Edgen, published April 15th. A Tom Green County grand jury indicted a San Angelo man with 7 felonies, which included shooting a woman in the back, firing at police, and child sexual assault, according to court documents released Tuesday, April 12th. About 8:05 p.m. January 16th, police arrived to a reported shooting on North Pope Street. They found a woman on the floor of a residence with a gunshot wound through her back. As she was transported to the hospital, she named a man as the shooter, records state. A witness told investigators that 12 days prior to the shooting, that same man threatened the woman with a gun, according to the affidavit. Around the same time, an indictment stated the man fired at 4 police officers while they attempted to detain him, records state. The investigation also revealed 2 reported child sexual assaults from August and September 2020. Luis Alberto Herrera, 37, was arrested January 17th on suspicion of aggravated assault causing serious bodily injury and 15 warrants. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $100,502 bond as of 11:45 a.m. Wednesday, April 13th. 3 indictments, totaling 7 felonies, charged Herrera with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, 2 counts of sexual assault of a child, and 4 counts of aggravated assault against a public servant. The child and deadly weapon charges are second-degree felonies, punishable by up to 20 years in prison and a fine not to exceed $10,000 each. The assaults against officers are first-degree felonies, punishable by 5 to 99 years in prison. A court date has been tentatively scheduled for April, according to online court records. San Angelo man arrested after gunshots fired at apartment complex. By Elena Edgen, published April 15th. A San Angelo man has been arrested months after multiple shots were fired through an apartment window into other units, according to an arrest affidavit obtained Thursday, April 14th. On January 9th, police arrived at an apartment complex on McKee Lane for reported shots fired. They met with a man who said he was in his ground floor apartment when a bullet entered his bedroom window and landed on his bed, records state. Officers found the bullet and determined it came from the west. They spoke with an intoxicated male subject in a unit directly west from the first apartment, who stated he did not hear any gunshots, according to the affidavit. An investigator noticed the western unit had 5 holes in the bedroom window and suspected the holes were caused by shots fired within the unit. When officers returned to speak with the man, they could not make contact, records state. The renter of the west unit, who was evicted in March 2022, told officers he was not there at the time of the shooting, but his relative might have been. Investigators compared photos of the relative and the intoxicated subject, then determined the person's identity. Mark Anthony Garcia, 36, was arrested early Thursday on suspicion of deadly conduct, discharged firearm. He was released from Tom Green County Detention Center hours later on a $25,000 bond, according to online jail records. Railway Museum of San Angelo to begin speaker series by Linda Thorson Bond, special to the San Angelo Standard-Times, published April 14th. Dr. Michael Shane Powers, assistant professor of history at Angelo State University, will make the inaugural presentation at the Railway Museum's new speaker series. He will speak about Knights and Barons, the Great Southwest Railroad Strike of 1886, on Thursday, April 21st. Powers is pleased to be the first in the new series. He said, "San Angelo has a rich history that is rooted in the late 19th century. I am honored to be the first speaker for one of the grand dames, the Railway Museum, of our town. I'm excited to share about what was happening regionally and nationally in the railroad industry, the ramifications of which shaped the coming of the railroad to San Angelo." He thinks Mark Twain has the best reason for studying history. Twain said, "History doesn't repeat itself, but it often rhythms." I believe studying the past is important in no small part because it aids us in understanding our own time. Plus, the drama of history is so much more interesting than anything films or novels can make up. Powers explained his subject. The Great Southwest Railroad Strike of 1886 begins in Texas. It centered around conflicts over the massive growth of corporations, especially railroads, following the U.S. Civil War. Nowhere did railroads grow more rapidly than west of the Mississippi, and particularly on the plains of Texas. People might be surprised about the strike and its effect. Powers said, "Part of the demands railroad workers make are taken for granted today, like the commonality of an 8-hour workday. Likewise, people did not have weekends off, nor did they even know the term weekend as we do today. People will also learn about U.S. business leaders like Jay Gould, who are not as widely remembered, but who shaped the development of America in important ways. In addition, people will learn about the laborers who actually built the railroads." Powers started at ASU's Dr. Arnaldo de Leon Department of History in 2019. He teaches history of Texas, the U.S. Civil War, U.S. Reconstruction, and the Gilded Age and Progressive Era. In addition, he teaches two intro classes on U.S. history, U.S. to 1865 and U.S. since 1865. His research dovetails nicely with the history of San Angelo, he said. "I specialize in the U.S. South, 19th, U.S. and transnational history. My research focuses on reciprocal links between the Gulf South and Latin America in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. My work builds upon scholarship of Southern interactions with Latin America after the Civil War to prompt new ways of thinking about the South's role in the industrialism and imperialism of the Gilded Age and Progressive Era. My book project argues that Southerners and Latin Americans who pursued increased commercial and political ties, from steamship routes to trade treaties, generated a powerful transnational dynamic that bolstered the power of the New South Democrats, particularly in port cities like New Orleans and Galveston. Examining both American and Latinx perspectives through events such as the 1884 New Orleans World's Fair, my manuscript contends that the roots of 21st century issues in both regions, from migration patterns to income and inequality, can be found in 19th century political and economic exchanges." Powers is from Gainesville, Florida, and grew up with a passion for history. His BA is from the University of Florida, his master's from Clemson University, and his PhD from the University of Arkansas. Powers' talk is free and open to the public April 21st at 5:30 p.m. at the Railway Museum of San Angelo, 703 South Chadron. For more information, go to sanangelorailway.org. And finally, we have our column, our weekly column from Allison Watkins. Tips for Keeping Trees Healthy in West Texas, published April 14th. Large, mature landscape trees are very valuable to home landscapes and provide a lot of enjoyment because of their beauty and the shade they provide that keep the home and yard cooler in the summer. Those homeowners lucky enough to have big trees usually have one goal: keep it alive. Depending on the type of tree, this can be fairly simple. Just don't do anything to damage or stress it. Some trees, like pecans, need quite a bit of effort to keep them happy, such as frequent irrigation, fertilization, pest control, etc. But live oaks, cedar elms, and other well-adapted trees are pretty resilient and can usually get the water they need from rainfall and the nutrients they need from the soil. Knowing the root system is the first step to keeping trees healthy. Roots need oxygen and water, so they grow most abundantly where they can easily get both, close to the surface. While trees do grow some deep roots to help with stability, most roots are in the top 6 inches of the soil, and they spread out far and wide away from the trunk. While many mature, well-adapted trees can get by mainly on rainfall during normal years, when we have extended periods of drought, it's very helpful to the tree to provide supplemental irrigation. But to be effective, it needs to be applied near the drip line, not at the trunk. For trees that have high water needs like pecans, they need to be irrigated in addition to what the turf grass and other landscape plants are getting. Knowing where the roots are is also important for protecting the tree from damage. Construction, trenching for plumbing or irrigation, application of pesticides, etc., can all have major impacts on tree health. Don't dig trenches near tree trunks, or create driveways, or do other projects without protecting as much of the root zone as possible, at least to the drip line, which is as wide as the canopy of the tree. Some weed and feed products, such as those containing the active ingredient atrazine, should not be applied to the rooting zone of trees. This herbicide in particular is good at moving through soil and can be taken up by tree roots, damaging the tree. When trees start to slowly decline, it's rarely one single cause that is stressing or killing the tree. It's usually a combination of several factors contributing to the problem. Tree stress is very hard to diagnose and even harder to fix, so the best bet is to provide the best cultural management. Start with planting a good tree species for the area, protect it from damage, and provide proper cultural management when needed, such as irrigation and fertilization. Allison Watkins is the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Agent for Horticulture in Tom Green County. Contact her at aewatkins@ag.tamu.edu.
Thank you for joining us for this reading of the San Angelo Standard Times. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.